The Good Neighbor Network, FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna, and online at WGNSradio.com.
Is up with one show giving you the truth about personal finance. This is Financial Coaching Radio. I'm your host, Jason Walls, certified financial planner, one of the only independent commission-free financial advisors in Wilson County. For all about me, check out the website, jasonwallscfp.com. jasonwallscfp.com. That's jasonquallscfp.com. Listen to the show anytime, anywhere, or send me an email via social media or whatever, straight up email. Click all those links at financialcoachingradio.com. Common question now that interest rates have been up there for quite some time: what if you have a short time horizon for investing? Typically, and there's no straight one way to do it. You know, some people, we got a 5-year time frame or more, you can invest in, you know, securities that fluctuate with the market. If you have a 5-year time frame or less, probably need to keep that more liquid. Some use 7 years. I'm on the 5-year deal. If it's 5 years or more, I think we got enough time to do, the longer the better. I think 10 years or more, it's a no-brainer, right? If it's money you don't need for 10 years, 7 to 10, I think we got to be investing that in the market. Now, how it should be invested is a whole different show. It's a whole different set of circumstances we're not going to cover here. This is for short-term assets, let's say 4 to 5 years or less. And depending on where you go, I'm looking at an article here from Forbes. Using bonds and fixed income investments like CDs. CDs would be a good one. Balanced mutual funds. No, don't do that. Index funds. No, don't do that. Blue chip stocks. No, don't do that. Real estate investment trust. No, don't do that. You know, if you have a 4-year or less time frame, it's going to be those things that are very equivalent to cash with a guaranteed fixed rate of return. Something that's liquid, that's not going to penalize you for getting the money out. That is what you're using as, and it may not be sexy. It may not be glamorous, but that's just what you do. And in that scenario, I think you got to stay liquid, and a lot of banks, these days are paying interest rates on savings accounts and money markets greater than 4%. Now, we have inflation, and what number you're looking at up there too. Now, usually when interest rates are high, inflation is high. Or other types of interest is high. Credit card interest has went up. Car loan interest has went up. Mortgage interest has went up. Now, interest rates rising, they rise across the board. But, it's been a long time since you could get a 4.5% fixed interest rate. And that's where we at. Now, that's why this one article that looked at, what if you have a 4-year time horizon, where should you invest? Anything to do with fixed income assets, I don't know if you could go, surely the next 3 or 4 years could be different. But the last 3 or 4 years have not even come close to that rate of return. They're probably negative in that sense. And why would we take the risk of having a 1, 2, 3% return or even negative by investing in fixed income assets? Well, we can go out and get a 4.2% rate of return on a savings account these days. This makes zero sense. And this article is just trash, for lack of a better term. It is just simply trash. And they go on to tell you maybe why you shouldn't invest in those assets. I'm telling you, don't even consider it. 4 years or less, that's liquidity. And what will be an example of 4 years or less asset or savings amount? Whatever the term you want to call it. Emergency fund, saving for a car, saving for a down payment on a house, saving for any other big purchase that you're going to be making in the next 3 to 4 or 5 years. If you put that into any type of volatile asset, stocks, bonds even, real estate investment trust, crypto. Now, you could be a trader and maybe get lucky, but financial planning ain't about luck. It's about thinking about worst case scenario, best case scenario, and what gives you the highest probability of success. And over the shorter term that you look at when it comes to stock investing or bond investing, certainly speculative assets like crypto, the more likely that in that time frame, 4 to 5 years, that you have a huge probability that it's going to be down. And huge may not be the right term, but it's certainly not guaranteed. You may have like a 50-50 chance. 50% you may do better than 4 or 5%. 50% chance you could be doing less or even negative. Not even worth it. Get a locked in fixed interest rate on all of your short-term savings. And the online banks, Ally is one of them. Need to be an advertiser on the show. So anyone from Ally Bank is listening, you need to be paying some advertising fees, okay? But Ally Bank's a great one. Capital One has a great savings. But all your local banks these days should be paying you somewhere around 4, 4.25% for savings and money market rates. If you're not getting that, you need to be looking elsewhere. We're out of time. Next time we'll cover using your securities to get a credit line, maybe even to buy real estate. So we'll talk about that on the next show, hopefully. All right, Estate Planning Talks is coming your way with a John Baker estate planning attorney. Keep it locked in right here on WGNS.
Hey, Financial Coaching Radio listeners, if you don't understand exactly how your financial advisor is compensated, you could be in big trouble. My name is Jason Qualls, a commission-free certified financial planner. To learn more about why my process is so unique, go to jasonquallscfp.com or call 878-2134 today. Okay, folks, I've said it before, but I'm going to say it again. If you were my client or a loved one, I would never let you get your wills done online. This is truly a case of where you only get what you pay for, and those you leave behind will be the ones to pay the price. Go see estate planning attorney John Baker today by calling 896-5621 or go to bakercounsel.com. Again, that's 896-5621 or bakercounsel.com. Get the expert estate planning advice you need today.
Did you know that the U.S. tax code has over 70,000 pages? This is precisely why you must have a tax expert on your team. The folks at TH&W CPAs have been providing their expertise to individuals and businesses in Middle Tennessee for over 50 years. And now they have an office right here in Murfreesboro. Call Kevin Sizemore today with TH&W CPAs at 848-1072. That's 848-1072 or online at thwcpa.com.
Welcome back to the show. This is Financial Coaching Radio. I'm Jason Qualls, Certified Financial Planner. Click email the show at financialcoachingradio.com or any of the social media links to jump in with a question or comment. Joining us now is John Baker, Estate Planning Attorney, bakercounsel.com is his web address. We'll jump right in and talk about placing your home into a trust. Most people have the question of doing so because they want to protect their major asset from a nursing home stay. What are some of the positives and negatives? And is that something that's still being utilized in today's estate planning world?
So there are irrevocable type trusts where the owner gives up, control and beneficial interest in a property, for perhaps the asset protection element. And in the right situation, yes, we still do those quite a bit. And they can work well. You do have to have the right circumstances, but if it fits, it can be a good tool. And that is a trust where you're giving up substantial control or legal, title to the property, as opposed to a revocable trust, which you retain control and all beneficial interest, but you don't you don't have asset protection in that situation.
And the alternative would be is not place your home in a trust, and you go into a nursing home. I guess the fear is that the government could come back and retrieve that asset, or you know, when the asset is sold. So how does that work in the real life terms? Let's say it's one surviving parent, and they pass away after being in a nursing home for an extended period of time. They were on Medicaid, all that stuff. Is the house up for grabs from the state?
Yeah, so when there is a surviving spouse, you know, there was a spouse, you know, they were a married couple, the one in the nursing home passes and you have the surviving spouse, you know, at home, there is something called TennCare Estate Recovery or Medicaid Estate Recovery, but it is, there's an exception to that when there's a surviving spouse. So if there's a surviving spouse, you know, the state or the Medicaid agency cannot come after that house so long as that spouse is living. And it does, you know.
And after they pass, is it now up for grabs then?
Well, but it really depends in that situation what the state would intend to do, what their policy might be at that time, and how it was titled. Generally, if I have a married couple that is going in, one of them is going in the nursing home, and the other is at home, I try to get the property out of the name of the one that's in the nursing home and have it deeded over to the one that's not. And that's a more firm way, secure way to avoid potentially state recovery, you know, for the one that was in the nursing home.
And otherwise, they would come back. Would they come back for just 50% of the home's value if you do not retire, just take the house out of the name?
Well, that's an unanswered area of the Tennessee law. What would happen? Would the state come after the surviving spouse passes? And I have not seen in Tennessee that happening. It may happen, and I'm sure it does happen in some other states, but there is some language in some Tennessee case law that suggests that TennCare could come after it in that situation, but I don't believe they are currently doing that, at least.
But to make sure, you just
it.
Go ahead and remove their name from the
That's right.
Date.
I think most attorneys that work in this area want to get the house over to the other spouse. And we, you know, in my practice, you know, we do that quite a bit when we have those types of cases.
So what, then there's this, the lone survivor that owns the property. And let's say they go into a nursing home. Is this Tennessee coming after the house then?
Yeah. So where there's not a spouse, you know, yes, they're going to file an estate recovery claim.
Wonder why they don't do that on surviving, just because they don't want to, like, putting someone on the street. They don't keep up with it. It's the government.
There's probably some legal and policy decisions made there. And like I said, there is some language in some Tennessee case law that suggests that they could potentially come in that situation. However, a Tennessee court has never, to my knowledge, definitively, you know, determined that. So it's kind of
a lot to keep up with from a government
it's
standpoint.
It's kind of a gray
right?
area,
because,
yes.
You know, if the husband goes in a nursing home first, the wife is at home, but she lives another 5, 10, 15 years after the fact.
Yeah.
You know, how do you keep up with that?
And what happens if the surviving spouse, you know, sold the house, maybe moved into an apartment or assisted living? You know, there's not going to be a house there to recover from. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of
sole
questions.
Survivor in a nursing home on Medicaid, they're typically going to retrieve assets from the houses.
They will normally file a claim.
Is it a lien, or are they forcing you to sell?
Well, it's a claim against the decedent's estate. So when the person dies, TennCare can file a claim in their estate, their probate estate, for the amount of benefits paid on behalf of the person.
And what if, and you miss probate, which let's say the couple had a revocable trust. Mm-hmm. With not going through probate, would they still be able to file a claim there?
Well, what happens with a revocable trust, let's just say it's a single individual to make it simple, is if the house is in the revocable trust, they will not exempt it for eligibility purposes till the person takes it out of the trust. So,
And in layman's terms, what does that mean?
What that means is they're not going to get tin care until they get the house out of the revocable
trust. Oh, so they don't have
trust.
To mess with that at the end. Okay.
So and I think that's probably why that policy may be in place. But the yes, you do have to take it out of the revocable trust to so the house can be exempt as the homestead property.
So on back to the trust planning, placing a home in a irrevocable trust to avoid these issues. Is that something that people are doing these days? Is it something you typically advise? Obviously, every situation is different. But if in an ideal world where money wasn't an object and time wasn't an object, is it a good estate planning tool for asset protection?
Yes, we do quite a bit of those, and in the right situation, it's got to be the right fit. You know, it can be a good planning tool, but it is an irrevocable trust. And the Medicaid 5-year look-back rule, you know, a lot of people have probably heard of that, does apply. So
then making you remove it from the trust is a non-issue there, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, because that's an irrevocable trust, and assuming that the person has passed the 5 years, they don't own it anymore. They have no interest in it at that point, and therefore, there would be no estate recovery because it would not be in their estate. And so it's
because a lot of people get, you know, their 60s, 70s, and 80s, they start getting concerned with this.
That's right.
And, you know, it's where you got to have the expert help come into your office and discuss, you know, do we retitle the house, take one person off? Do we use the trust? All these things come into play if that's a concern.
Yeah, then there's a lot of factors there. Let's say, for example, maybe it's a married couple and one of them is already got a diagnosis of a long-term illness. Maybe they've got moderate dementia, other health issues, and they may not think they got 5 years, okay? You know, that irrevocable trust may not be a good fit. We may need to look at some other planning options. And when you do have a spouse, the Medicaid laws do provide a lot of opportunities to plan for that spouse at home that we can usually do quite effectively, and that can work well so long as the surviving spouse or the spouse at home doesn't also need care. If they both need care, then some of those plans don't work well. But again, with the irrevocable trust, you've got to keep in mind that 5-year look back, you know, what the health situation is.
And let's go deeper into that. Mm-hmm. So what is the 5-year look back as it relates to Medicaid?
So basically, if you transfer a property for less than full value, so in other words, you gift it to a child or to a trust, Medicaid, to put it simply, can still consider that property yours for eligibility purposes.
For five years,
and if you've given it away, they have a penalty calculation that they will do, and they will basically say that for this period of time, we will not pay benefits for you because you gave away an asset.
Or you could just sell it outright for fair market value, and then there's other liability issues that come into play.
Well, if you sell the home, of course...
sell it to a family member. Arm's length? Does that come into play as well?
Yeah. Well, for sales purposes, as far as what they consider full value, the state Medicaid office will look initially to the tax appraised value. So generally, they go by the tax appraised value of the property as far as what they deem to be for value, full value.
Any changes coming our way for Medicaid, TennCare, as far as it relates to, you know,
I haven't seen any real, you know, law changes. You know, they're always TennCare, Medicaid. You know, they're always refining their systems, the application processes. There's a website called TennCare Connect, which they work to try to make it more user friendly to gain access to the person's TennCare account to upload documents. To receive letters.
Sort of like a paper form, like back in the day.
That's right. And so so I see things like that going on. But as far as the changes in the law, it's been pretty consistent, for a while.
John Baker, BakerCounsel.com. If you have an asset protection or Medicaid or estate planning question, hit them up online, BakerCounsel.com. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with you right after this. Keep it locked in right here on Financial Coaching Radio. Looks insane.
We're News Radio WGNS, 100.5, 101.9, 1450. Online and on your phone at WGNSradio.com.
Do you have a financial plan? I'm not talking about a worthless binder full of pretty charts and graphs. Are you certain you're on track to reach all your financial goals? A comprehensive financial plan is about so much more than just your IRA and mutual funds. It involves risk management, tax planning, professional investment management, retirement, and estate planning. Make sure your entire financial life is in order by calling me, Jason Qualls, a commission-free certified financial planner at 878-2134, or go to my website, jasonquallscfp.com. Buying a house is stressful, and so is shopping for a mortgage. Take my advice and get a second opinion on the mortgage for your new home or your refinance. Not all banks and mortgage companies are created equal. Trust me on this. Call my friend Marshall Sparkman with Franklin Synergy Bank at 615-439-0885. Great team, great process, and the best rates. Marshall Sparkman with Franklin Synergy Bank at 615-439-0885.
Back to Financial Coaching Radio, the one show giving you the truth about personal finance. I'm Jason Qualls, certified financial planner. Jason Qualls, CFP.com for all about me. Still talking about estate planning today. If you have a question, comment, reach out to us. Click email the show at financialcoachingradio.com. John Baker, estate planning attorney, bakercounsel.com. Let's talk about marital property. Let's say one owns a home and then they get married. What is the, what's the rules there? Who owns the house? Is it marital property? Is it not marital property? Does the value from the point of marriage go with the marriage? How does all that work? Because there's a lot of people getting married later in life these days. A lot of people getting, second or third marriages where they already own property, especially real estate. How does it work when it comes to a house?
Yeah. Well, I think one thing to keep in mind is that marital property, under divorce or family law, can depend on whether it was commingled, whether it was considered either formally or implicitly as property of the marriage, and that's something a divorce judge determines.
But if it was owned before the marriage, how could it be marital property?
Well, if they commingled in a way,
they lived there.
And that's right. And maybe they both were making payments and helping repairs and maintenance and upgrades.
So if you want it to just be yours, so that the spouse cannot be contributing property to anything to do. Well, what if you make case, I didn't make the mortgage payment. I didn't make the repairs, but lieu of that did these other things. Did you still make a claim on that?
Yes, I think that's typically probably what's going to happen in a divorce case. Now, so you've got divorce law definition of marital property. And then you got inheritance law, and basically if...
Well, let's talk on the inheritance part. Yeah. So let's say you get remarried, you owned the home before, and then let's say you die as the real estate residence owner, then whose asset is that?
Yeah, so let's say I died and I made a will, and I made my spouse the beneficiary of my estate.
That'd be way too easy, though.
That'd be too obvious. But let's say that I did not make a will. I have three children from a prior marriage, and I just die. I have no will. In that case, who is the beneficiary of my estate? And Tennessee law is going to apportion that out amongst the spouse and the children.
Based on the laws that are already in place,
and
without a will.
Because it isn't that it's not when he acquired the property, it's that he owned it when he died, and the inheritance laws would apply at that time, and it would say that the spouse and the children are going to have shares of that property where there was no will. Now, it can get more complicated than that, but people do confuse that a lot. They think, well, I had it before, or daddy had the property before he married her, but she may still very well have an interest in that property when he dies, if she's an heir or if she's a beneficiary of daddy's will.
What if in the scenario of marital property and divorce that there is a non-working spouse that has no ownership title to the house? Is that still, is divorce one of those things where if you can just sue over anything, you kind of got to sort it out in court?
Or is it? Well, with the qualification that I'm not a divorce attorney, that's how right. I kind of perceive it. Right. Yes.
That's what it kind of sounded like when you described it.
It all kind of gets put out there and the arguments on both sides and the judge has to sort it out.
But yeah, if you're co-mingling for sure, that's
I do think, you know, judges are going to probably be sensitive to that, though. If you had a fairly long marriage and this is the spouse at home.
Well, you're just going to turn around and pay that out in alimony anyway.
You know, it may not have worked. You know, maybe she just stayed at home and cared for the house. And so, yeah, it can get obviously complicated in divorce.
Does trust planning come in there? What if there's the house that your assets are in a trust? And let's go revocable first, and then you get married. Are those assets still up for grabs, or does irrevocable trust make a play on that different?
So I think what the trust does, and let's say you set up the trust before you remarried, then it is separate for title purposes. We certainly know that, and it could be written, particularly if it's an irrevocable trust, that it's not subject to marital division. So yes, trust planning, could affect that for sure.
Good old prenup.
Prenuptials, yes, obviously, yeah.
And is it still the case that prenups are very, very tricky to put in force, very, very tricky to enforce?
Well, my view of it is, if you're doing a prenuptial, is that you do have to dot your I's and cross your T's, and each spouse has to have separate counsel. Otherwise, in my opinion, they can be hard to enforce if that time came.
It seems like the estate planning part, and I can't believe I'm even saying this, is a little bit more black and white. On the marital side, it's ownership and marital property is very ambiguous.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense because, in the marital situation, like I said, every marriage is different, and the judge has to sort out the nuances of the marriage when he decides how to divide the property. And the judge has very broad discretion on how to divide that property in a divorce.
So don't leave it up to the judge.
Right. In an estate case, the law pretty well defines who the beneficiaries are. If there's a will, then you're going to look to the terms of the will. If there's not a will, you're going to look to the terms of the state law that are going to say the spouse gets this much and the children get this much.
And we were talking in terms of a home, and what about other assets? Say that husband he's not married yet, but has a business, started that business before the marriage, gets married, but then, there's some commingling where the spouse is contributing to the business in some way. And do they have a claim on the business? Like they would have a claim on a piece of real estate.
So I think, in the divorce law context, I think that would be pretty typical.
That is shocking. That is very so. Everything is kind of up for grabs, and it's all the discretion of the judge or mediator, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and that's divorce where you've got assets, business interests, things like that. It can absolutely get complicated.
When these questions and issues come into play as an estate planning term, but they also have these questions as it relates to divorce. Is it common practice where estate planning attorneys and divorce attorneys work together to get these estate planning documents correct to minimize these issues in case of a divorce?
Well,
or is that just prenuptial?
I'm not necessarily a divorce attorney and an estate attorney, but maybe the estate attorney is working with a lawyer that may also do divorce that does prenuptial agreements. So like for me personally, I don't do prenuptial agreements. But if I have a situation where the parties, want and need that, I'm going to refer them to a lawyer who does. And I do think a lot of divorce attorneys do prenuptials. But you do have to be familiar with that law because there has to be full disclosure of assets. Each side should have their independent attorneys advising them. So it gets very complicated sometimes in implementing those. And but yes, you you know, whichever attorneys, you know, is doing that. And there's some estate attorneys that do prenuptial agreements. It's just, I personally don't, but, you know, some
probably
do.
good practice to have.
So, well, I just thought I would leave that to the family attorneys, you know, that deal in the nuances of those issues. But, you know, I do have to be familiar with the law in that area so that I can, you know, advise clients on what they may want or need from an estate planning perspective.
John Baker, BakerCounsel.com. If you want to reach him here, and a local number, 896-5621. That's 615-896-5621. John, I appreciate your time.
Yeah, always great to be here, Jason.
All right, that's good stuff right there. Talking about estate planning, marital property, and what happens to your assets in those unique situations regarding a nursing home. Stick around, and I'll wrap up the show. This is Financial Coaching.
How much are your investments costing you each year? Most people don't have a clue. Why is this extremely important? Because overpaying by just 1% a year in fees and expenses can reduce your account balance at retirement by 28%. You heard me right. 28% less at retirement. I'm commission-free, certified financial planner Jason Qualls. I don't sell financial products. I don't accept commissions or kickbacks from investment companies. Give me a call today for a free unbiased investment review at 878-2134 or visit my website, jasonquallscfp.com. A recent undercover study found that over 89% of paid tax preparers made mistakes. You heard me right, over 89%. Is your tax person making mistakes? Tax mistakes cost you money and may even lead to an IRS audit. I recommend you get a second opinion on your tax return today by calling Tetherow Helen Welch CPAs at 848-1072. Tetherow Helen Welch has been providing tax services to individuals and businesses for over 50 years. So call them today at 848-1072 or go to thwcpa.com.
Welcome back to the show. This is the one show giving you the truth about personal finance. No books to sell. Certainly not pushing any live event tickets. I'll leave that to the other guys. If you want to listen to the show anytime, anywhere, click email. Not email the show. Incorrect. Click the archives at financialcoachingradio.com. You can contact us as well. Click email the show. Same website, financialcoachingradio.com. As always, no matter what you're into, estate planning, tax planning, financial planning, investments, mortgages, even insurance planning. Get seconds, can't speak today. Get second opinions on all those issues. And at the head of everything should be your trusted certified financial planner. Your independent fee-only CFP can guide you. Say, get a couple quotes from these agents. Get a couple, you know, consultations from these attorneys, these tax planning people. Because if they're truly independent, they're truly fee-only, they're not receiving referral fees, and they're going to guide you to the expert that makes the best decision for you, or at least you can have choices. And that's what it's all about. You know, consulting the right people will save you a lot of time, effort, and money, so make sure you're always getting a second opinion. All right, I'm Jason Qualls, Certified Financial Planner, and check out jasonquallscfp.com for all about me. I am one of the only independent commission-free financial advisors in Rutherford County. I'm out of here for today. Keep it locked in. More local talk, as always, is always on the way at WGN.